So there's a teacher named Lao Tzu. Some of you have probably heard of him. He says, "Muddy water, let stand, becomes clear." Muddy water, let stand, becomes clear. So there's, after we do any kind of practice, even if internally the practice felt very busy, when you're done, open your eyes again if your eyes were closed before you get up and do the next thing, which is typically what we do. But for right now, just to notice a different sense of your body or your breath or your mind or maybe your heart is to notice what I like to call the resonance of the practice. Because this kind of really recognizing or paying attention to what we just did and how it feels is your direct experience of it. And this is pivotal. This is really super important because a lot of times we will go on blind faith that something might be working or will work in the future, and we're not really testing it out for ourselves so much. And then that can be disappointing. If we test something out for ourselves, we know exactly what it can offer, at least for now. We can also have some faith that develops when we start to do something over and over again, and we notice, oh, I feel like this. Oh, this affects me like that. Oh, okay, maybe it's helpful in this situation. And we do it over and over and over again. And that repetition is how we begin to embody and assimilate and own whatever the practice is. And that direct experience is what we then have complete faith in. We know. So the science is catching up to what a lot of us already know. That's fine. So we want to not discount the knowing. And once we've tried things on a few times, at least, then we know, oh, well, maybe I want to fiddle with it like this, or I want to try it like this, or more time, or less time, or in this situation, not this one. It's like a recipe, a little more, a little less. But it's according to what we need. And we know more what we need over time when we continually check in with ourselves and ask ourselves what's going on. Yeah? So when we start a practice with the breathing, that'll have a different flavor or feeling or tone or intonation or resonance than if we just came and sat and noticed the breath as it is. Could you get a sense of that? Was there a little bit of a difference? Now, you may want to repeat that, you may not. But just to parenthetically, at least, tell you why. So I'm kind of an information person. I like to know why I might want to do something. And when I first started practicing meditation and through the Dharma lens, I'm going to paraphrase. Someone said something like, yeah, the Buddha suggests or said that for us not to believe anything unless we've directly experienced it for ourselves. So don't believe the wise. The people that you think know more than you, unless you've directly experienced it. And I thought, that's someone I can listen to. I can learn from that person. And that's kind of what sent me into, 30 years of study and practice. Because it's not about what we blindly believe in, but it's what we gain faith in through direct experience. This is how wisdom grows. It's cultivated and grows from trying it on and trying it on and trying it on a little differently and trying it on a little differently, but through these direct experiences. So after a practice, it's really important to just stop for a moment, because we've let that muddy water stand for a few moments, yeah? So even if it were just a couple of moments in that practice that you were still, that's fine. That's okay. Don't discount that. And then, you know, things become just a tiny bit more clear, or much more clear, depending on where we are, state of mind or state of being, the practice that we're doing. And then we really notice, what was that? What does it feel like now? That's really, really important. Especially since we want to, I think, you know, you're here to gain more skillful means, more tools to help yourself. So it's not about what I'm going to say as much as it is you trying it. So being, you know, someone that likes information, I like to tell you why we're doing what we're doing. Yeah. So we entered in through the breath practice, which helps to tone and regulate the vagus nerve, or the vagal vagus nerve. You might have heard of that. And it's sort of a bunch of nerves that begin in the brain, and they head down to all of our organs and glands. They kind of go throughout the body. And they can regulate the nervous system or dysregulate, you know, the nervous system. And so it especially regulates the parasympathetic nervous system, which creates some calm. It can help us to override the amygdala area of the brain, a little part in the back of the skull that sends out these messages like, get ready, this is going to happen. It's the fight or flight response central system, let's say. It's the more, sometimes called the reptile brain, the limbic area. And it's one of the original parts of our brain. You know, we've inherited it. And it's not changed too much since we've arrived on the planet. Now, that the limbic, the amygdala, the limbic part of the brain is also responsible for creativity. So it's not just a negative aspect of our minds or our brain. So I don't want to discount it. I like my amygdala. I like my limbic system. But the parasympathetic nervous system is something that we can tone and regulate. And so that we can still hear what's going on from the limbic system. But we don't necessarily have to always answer its call. And this is what we're going to explore a little bit more today. And we can do that by really bringing ourselves into the body and being embodied. For instance, do you feel a sense of weight in your body right now? Can you sense a little bit more heaviness? When we're anxious, we're not heavy. We're twitchy, nervous, internally, even if we're not showing that externally. We're up high, not so much down towards the earth. Can you sense that just in your memory of feeling anxious? So where would your breath typically be located when you're anxious? Can anybody? Higher up, yeah. Or being held even, yeah. That's the opposite of what we can feel or where the breath is when maybe after feeling or practicing some breath practice or after doing a little meditation, it's as if the center of gravity drops. That's a good thing. When we say we're embodied, or when we want to be embodied, you know, being embodied has a sense of weight. When we're not in the body, we're up here somewhere over the body. You know, the body's just sort of kind of getting us around. But it's, you know, we really don't pay attention to it. You probably heard this quote a bunch of times from the Dubliners, James Joyce. And it's quoted differently depending on who says it, but I took this right from the book. It says, Mr. Duffy lived a little distance from his body, regarding his own acts with double side glasses. He had an odd autobiographical habit, which led him to compose his mind from time to time in a short sentence about himself, containing a subject in the third person and a predicate in the past tense. He never gave alms to beggars and walked firmly, carrying a stout hazel. Not exactly sure what the hazel is. Pardon me? Cane, a stout hazel. He abhorred anything which betokened physical or mental disorder. You get a picture of Mr. Duffy? Not in his body. Third person, disdain. I don't like any disorder. I'm out of here, right? Now, how many times do we do that? Lots. If we can joke about it, better, that's better. So we're not really sensing the body as we go about our day, because who was trained? I wasn't. It's not something, I mean, it's starting to be taught a little bit more in school. You know, younger and younger people are starting to be taught contemplative practices, mindfulness, some yoga, Tai Chi, Qigong, things like that. It's really helpful. But that wasn't around when I was a kid. In fact, the body really was just to get us around, and it worked, you know, really well. And then when it hurt, you took something for it, or you put a Band-Aid on it and cursed at it and maybe didn't like it. But that was about it. And there's so much benefit in being in the body. For instance, just feeling the weight of it connects us to the present moment, and it puts us on the earth body. I'll just let that sit in for a second. Where is home? So we can find home in our bodies somewhere, eventually. We can find home on the earth. And being in the body is only in the present moment, no matter how we sense it. It's not in the future and it's not in the past. So it can help us to be here now. It can bring us back to what is true, not just what we think is real. Think, operative word. Yeah? It brings us back to now. And that's really important, because when we start to sense, first of all, I should say, the more connected we are to the body, the more sensitive we become to it, which might take you some time. Maybe the body's not comfortable for you yet. I totally understand that, and it's not uncommon. But as we become more sensitive and get to know the landscape of our own body, then we start to sense when it starts to shut down, when it gets tight, it contracts, it holds against. We start to be able to know the feelings of the somatic expression, the felt sense of fear, of doubt, of discomfort, of anxiety, or even things like anger, you know, any of the stronger emotions, yeah? We can start to sense, because we've started to traverse the landscape of the body more and more, when, as we're able, you know, might take a little bit at a time, a little at a time, that's okay. But as we become more sensitive and embodied, then we know when it feels good. And we start to sense when it's starting not to. And that's really important, okay? Because our bodies will sense a thought or an emotion before we cognize it or them. That's something to remember. So the body is like, you know how animals sense some sort of natural impending, you know, disaster coming, like a tsunami or a big storm or an earthquake or something like that. You know, you start to see the birds leave and the animals crawl to higher ground. They do something, yeah? Because they're so connected and sensitized, not just to their to the earth body and the wind and the change of light and all those kinds of things that will go on, the smells that, that will change, but their own body, and then they can find safety. Well, we're just not attuned to our bodies in that way. Not yet, anyway. We can become. But when we are attuned to our bodies more in that way, you start to feel a little part of your body begin to shut down, resist, hold back, contract, cling, push away, however you want to think of it, you know, as it begins more and more, because you know, okay, this is what it feels like to be grounded and spacious. I'm doing just more open like this. And then, you know, you something triggers what you know might cause or create or take you down the road of anxiety or discursive thinking even, and that space starts getting a little bit tighter, smaller, constricted. And if you're not paying attention, it gets tighter, smaller, and constricted until the breath is like barely happening. It's up high and the mind's gone, vroom, it's gone. We're hijacked, right? Typical sort of trajectory of anxiety or panic attack. So in those moments when we've been hijacked, or those minutes, those really uncomfortable minutes, there's not as much that we can do to bring ourselves back. There are things, of course, and we'll look at those in a bit. But what we can do, what I want you to just keep in mind right now, is that we can avoid things from getting heightened and to the point of no return sooner and sooner by sensitizing ourselves to the body and how it feels, to the breath and what it's doing. So mindfulness is key. Mindfulness of the body and mindfulness of the breath. And using skillful means is key. So we're mindful the breath is tight. Or we're mindful of the body and actually not really feeling the body. There are big areas or swaths of numbness or discomfort. That's still mindfulness of the body. And then we use the skillful means, like what we just did with the breathing, and then we notice, oh, well, that's just shifted that whole landscape, or at least part of it. Then we're mindful of that. And as we're paying attention on purpose, we can also try, as to the best of our ability, to be tender and kind about what we're noticing and give ourselves this option of being like, oh, wow, that's good. That worked. Huh. of being curious and inviting experiences in as experiments, yeah, rather than, I don't know, just fixing a mind and not wanting to try anything. So there's a sutta that I want to quote, and it's the Vitaka Santana Sutta, and it's translated a lot of times as the removal of distracting thoughts. It's a good one, eh? Or the relaxation of thoughts, or the discursive thinking mind. And in this sutta, the Buddha is suggesting that we deliberately ignore the thoughts that are unskillful, that are painful, that are nagging, that are discursive or repetitive, those ones. And that we turn away from them and don't give them attention. So I find that really interesting, because you can't really turn away from your thoughts unless you've started to train your mind in mindfulness. Because we kind of get a little bit hijacked by our thoughts. So part of the beauty of a mindfulness practice or a meditation practice, mindfulness is part of meditation practice, is that we gain the capacity to turn towards or turn away, depending on whether something is helpful or not helpful, skillful or not skillful, harmful even, or helpful, right? I said that twice. That's good news, isn't it? That means that we have some choice. Now, that may not come automatically and every time, but we're not enlightened yet. So give yourself a little sprout on that. But we turn away, giving no attention to the discursive thoughts, the harmful thoughts, the thoughts that feel real but aren't true. Can you distinguish those? There are thoughts that feel very real, but they may not be true. Those are the thoughts of fear, or this is going to happen. I know this is going to happen, but it hasn't yet. So they might feel very real, but they're not quite true. So as if we're shutting our eyes or quickly looking away from the disturbing or the harmful thought. That's turning towards, turning away. And then he says, if these thoughts continue, which we know they do, yeah, the wildly unskillful thought stream should be gradually slowed and stilled by slowing the breath step by step, as if gradually slowing one's pace from a run to a walk to standing. That's what we did with that breath. We notice the breath to begin, we gradually slowed it down. And as importantly, we noticed or we began to hold those little tiny pauses just a bit longer. Those are traditionally in the yogic tradition called retentions. There's a full retention, a full pause after the inhalation. There's an empty pause, empty retention. You're still retaining because you're holding after the exhale. Yeah. So that's what we did in the breath, is we slowed it down from a run to a walk to standing by considering the four different parts of breath. So I already mentioned how that works on the physiological system. This is how it works even mentally, emotionally, somatically, okay? In the subtle body even, okay? The unseen body, the nervous system. The nervous system is part of the subtle body, okay? So that's why we did the four parts. Does that make sense? Okay. So Viktor Frankl, probably heard of Viktor Frankl, said between stimulus and response, there's a space. In that space is our power to choose our response. In our response lies growth and our freedom. So one of the things that's really important is to start instigating a little bit of space, whether it's through breathing or just taking a moment, a pause. Because that gives us a little time to pay attention and to, like Lao Tzu said, let that muddy water that's been all shaken up or starting to get shaken up, let it stand, let it clear, and then, oh, okay, start again. Or attend to, yeah? So it's the opposite of just getting swept up in the storm. We're starting to sense, and this happens in the body, okay? So by being more sensitized to the body, to this form that we are in, like it or not, it's our state of consciousness here, our home of consciousness, I should say, not our state, but yeah, it can actually be our state too. But by sensitizing ourselves to the body, the felt sense, the somatic experience of having a body, then we allow ourselves, or we offer ourselves, or we cultivate the ability to take a moment, to stand on the earth, not be flying off somewhere all the time or most of the time. So it becomes something that, with repetition, becomes more and more a natural aspect of our lives. With repetition, that's really key. So here's the thing, you know, we'll hear about a lot of really interesting techniques and teachings, and, you know, maybe even put a quote or two in front of ourselves in, you know, some point during the day and get an inspiration, and then we forget. So that's just human nature. That's not because you're bad or you're not, you know, practiced long enough or something. We all forget. And so the generosity of practice is that whenever we want to, we can remember and start again. So when you're not in your body, you bring yourself back. But the key is to be awake and mindful more and more of the time so that we notice when we're not.